The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
Arkansas got a W. It has meant six straight losses. It seemed like it was a game that Arkansas had to win, a must win, a desperate win. They get the win, even with a backup quarterback in Connor Noland, even the fact that they didn't have Devoir Whaley, and it looks like Rakeem Boyd was all banged up at the end of that game too. But regardless, a win is a win is a win. And we all know how badly Arkansas needed it. But the conversation now turns into going back into SEC play. Because let's be honest, folks. Arkansas winning this game the way they did probably doesn't change your mind a lot when it comes to how the outlook of the rest of the season will be. I don't think anybody was going into this Tulsa game saying, I don't think we're going to beat Vanderbilt. But then after they beat Tulsa, they came out, now we're going to beat Vanderbilt. I don't think it was that type of performance. But I do think that the fact that we can at least come out on this show and say Arkansas got a victory, I think that at least Chad Morris can go into that locker room coming off of a victory. Even though it wasn't the greatest of performances, a win meant more than anything to this team after having six straight losses. That's what it was about, was just getting a win.
Particularly a win when you had your backup quarterback, you were missing Devoir Whaley, you were shorthanded in several areas personnel-wise, and you still found a way to get it done. Now, granted, no one's trying to pretend you beat, you know, a top-five team here.
Absolutely
you didn't pull
not.
Off the miracle of all miracles here. You didn't even beat a Power 5 team, but at least you beat an FBS team. And right now, this team, it didn't matter who you won against. You just needed to win right now. And hopefully, from a mental standpoint, from a confidence standpoint, it's the kind of boost they need heading back into the balance of the schedule. Four remaining conference games. Two of those games in the remaining schedule as of today, you're playing against teams that are in the same boat as you. Same boat as the Razorbacks. Haven't yet gotten a conference win. Battle this weekend of two 0-4 league teams. Somebody's going to get off that schneid. Right now, Missouri has still not won. I think they're 0-3 in league play. There's only three. That's all three of them left in the league. So you've got some winnable games is the point. You got four games left. Two of them are very winnable for this Razorback team. Do you now believe you can go win those games?
Yeah, that's the key, is in belief. But I think that we can all agree that the success of those games, and if Arkansas is going to get a victory in those games, Ty Story has to come back and be healthy. Because as good as we saw at times, they didn't play horrible. Connor Noland didn't play just a horrible game. Mm-hmm. But again, you see the difference Ty Story makes when he's the quarterback of his offense compared to anybody else on this roster.
Connor Noland was 10 of 16 passing, had the one interception early, just over 124 yards of passing on Saturday, and ran it five times himself for 20 yards as well. He didn't do anything to hurt his team in any way, shape, or form, and for a true freshman on homecoming to come out and give that kind of performance was nice to see. But I'm with you. There was nothing that said, hey, now we got a quarterback controversy. Hey, now we've got some issues over who should be the starting quarterback. Hey, should Connor Noland be considered for even more playing time? I don't think anyone leaves with that opinion quite yet. But I do feel better about the future of the position, whether Kelly Bryant comes or not.
Yeah, which we will talk about Kelly Bryant in his visit later in the show as well, because I know a lot of people are fascinated by that. But like you said, you were worried, and a lot of people were worried for a lot of different reasons going into this game, and especially when it was announced that Ty Story, which we talked about on the show on Friday, was not going to play. And it was almost like there was a little bit of a troll game going on where at the stadium, Cole Kelly was announced as the starter.
That was weird.
And then Chad Morris told Chuck Barrett on the pregame show that it was going to be Connor Nolan, so then everyone kind of went into panic mode because BU people were tweeting out, oh, it's Cole Kelly. Wait a minute, I thought it was hurt Connor Nolan. So it was almost like there was a purposeful trolling job there by Chad Morris.
And then if you want to go to hitthatline.com and watch Connor's post-game comments when he met with the media after the game. He found out Wednesday he was going to be the starter. He kind of revealed how that worked behind the scenes. So clearly the plan was in place from middle of the week on. We found out Thursday, shared with the audience Friday, that there was going to be a change at the starting quarterback role due to Ty Story not clearing concussion protocol. And then today it will be interesting to see what Chad Morris says about what will happen this week. Will he be coy? Will he keep that information close? Or will he say, nope, Ty Story has cleared the test and he is back? We'll see how he plays that.
Well, given what Chad Morris has done so far, I think it'll probably be the first one.
Well, first of all, Ty's got to get all that. Maybe he has, maybe he hadn't at this point. I don't know. But I'm just saying at some point, if he hasn't yet, at some point he's got to clear medically to play.
Yeah.
And maybe he has to this point. I don't know.
Am I overstating it and thinking that if Ty Story is healthy and ready to go against Vanderbilt, I have Arkansas winning, but if they don't, if he doesn't get to be able to play in this game, then they lose?
Oh, I think he makes that kind of difference.
Which is crazy to think that the quarterback would make that type of difference.
Well, wait, what team does the quarterback not make that kind of difference in a 50-50 game? In a game that's, has a line even come out yet? I haven't looked.
Yeah, originally started out at Arkansas being favored by 2.5, okay, so, and now it's already moved to Vanderbilt being favored by 1. So it moved.
So we're
quick.
Talking basically a pick 'em game, less than a touchdown, half a touchdown game. The quarterback, if it changed for Vanderbilt, that's going to make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen consistently throughout this season and in previous seasons, particularly in this spread offense, tempo offense, RPO-based offense that Chad Morris is trying to put in here. We're seeing it this year at Auburn. They're not getting out of Stidham what they need. They're struggling. You saw it at Tulsa Saturday. Their quarterback situation not good. Arkansas's quarterback situation has been shaky trying to find the right person. When you don't have the right person, it's hard to make your offense run efficiently. And then you get the right guy at Alabama, and look what their offense has done. Yeah, the quarterback makes a huge difference, particularly in this system. Huge difference.
I guess I just was a little more surprised by the amount of drop-off that there was and that there is right now. Because, listen, when we were all talking about it and going through it and looking at between Ty Story and Cole Kelly and even a Connor Noland, I mean, the way it started off, it was so bad at the quarterback position. I know we saw some good things from Ty Story that I guess when you see just how big of a difference he makes in this Tulsa game, that was a little surprising just that it was that big of a drop-off. But, yeah, I get what you're saying because I think any time that you have this type of offense, and even on most football teams, because let's be honest, even Alabama with Tua, they have Jalen Hurts backing up. But you're telling me
Jalen Hurts backing up? Because he didn't quite have all the skills
exactly
to run the offense.
And that's what I'm saying is, like, even if he went out of the game, the offense would have a drop-off to Jalen Hurts, even though he's a great quarterback.
And listen, you know, as we saw this weekend with Kelly Bryant visiting and fans foaming at the mouth trying to show him love and affection and that his services are wanted here. What's that tell you that fans think about the quarterback position and where Arkansas is at? They know it needs vast improvement, right? So, you know, Ty Story is a serviceable quarterback, but I don't believe anyone has going to nominate him for all conference honors, you know.
No. I mean, this is going to be this Vanderbilt game, this is going to be a fun one to try to break down and discuss, and I'm sure we'll be having some people from Vanderbilt who covers the team to come on. But, you know, this is – the lines are basically a pick 'em. If Ty Story's healthy, you feel confident in Arkansas, but it's not like you'll be surprised if they lose this game. Both teams are winless in the SEC. And as much as it meant for Arkansas to beat Tulsa, imagine how much it'll mean for Chad Morris in Arkansas to beat Vanderbilt, an SEC opponent, where you don't have to look back on Chad Morris's tenure, look back the previous year and say, we went winless in the SEC like you did with Brett Bielema in his first year, because you saw how detrimental that was and how much that hurt and how much it took to get over that. The last thing you want to do if you're Chad Morris is do that.
Well,
and Vanderbilt might be your best opportunity. I know Missouri's winless too, but Vanderbilt – At home this weekend, it's the best opportunity to get an SEC victory.
If you weren't watching Saturday night, Vanderbilt lost to Kentucky 14-7. I watched some of this game. There were so many games on Saturday night. It was hard to make that one the top priority to watch because you had the Ohio State-Purdue game, which was extremely entertaining and fun to watch. You had, LSU and Mississippi State going on. So, I mean, those were kind of the marquee games on Saturday night. And then you had, Oregon and Washington State
Well
playing. So, Kentucky and Vanderbilt didn't quite get to the top of the list.
But yeah, didn't
it was
make
still
the
a
mark.
Good game, 14-7. Kentucky, a very solid Kentucky year, one of their banner years by Kentucky standards, and they got a really good football team just by a touchdown over Vanderbilt. And we've seen Vanderbilt have a lead on Florida, another ranked team. On paper, just based on the eye test, Vanderbilt appears to be a bit of a better football team at this point than Arkansas. Is that a fair assessment based on the way they've played against some of the teams that have proven to be pretty solid teams?
I mean, they went on the road to Notre Dame earlier in the year and only lost by five. I mean, they
played, another example.
They played really well, and in the past 3 weeks, they've played nothing but ranked opponents with Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky. 41-13 to Georgia, 37-27 to Florida, and of course 14-7 to Kentucky. So they've played some of these games close against ranked. So yeah, they're not
based on that. I mean, that's and what I've just seen watching. I watch more of them against Florida than I have probably anyone. You know, you're thinking, this is a team that is certainly talented enough to come in and handle the Razorbacks, but I think it's a team talented enough, if Arkansas doesn't play their best, could beat Arkansas 2 to 3 touchdowns.
Could happen.
You know, that they're, you know, and they're looking for their first win. And you think they're worried and concerned that they can't beat Arkansas? They're looking at this is our best chance to get a game. They're in the same mindset.
Yep. So as weird as it is, you know, usually
it's important for them. I mean, same thing that they're looking to avoid, the winless SEC season.
Yeah.
The donut.
Yeah, you can kind of compare this game to the LSU-Alabama game. Both teams are on the same level. Both teams knows what's at stake. The only difference is one or two teams have a few more wins than the
other end of the spectrum,
it certainly is.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skipping. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Go to the phone lines. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette now joins us on the Morning Rush. Tom, how you doing this morning, man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
That's good to have you on, and we've been giving our reactions to Arkansas defeating Tulsa 23-0. Obviously, it was a much-needed victory by the Razorbacks, but, I mean, do you really take anything away from this game? Backup quarterback situation, the defense played well, the offense had some issues there, but what can you really take away from this victory from Arkansas when you saw what they did against Tulsa?
Well, my biggest takeaways were I felt like that they should be able to win the game in the trenches, and they did that. And so the defense faced a foe they felt was inferior to them. And, a few things leaked out early in the game. I thought Shamari Brooks ran well, and then the dump pass to Taylor, on which Scooter Harris basically had Boomer wrapped up, but he stiff-armed him away with his left arm and kept his right arm free to dump that pass away. But they dominated an opponent they felt like they could in the trenches, made them pass, and right now the Tulsa passing game is not at the point with Seth Boomer and those receivers to really hurt him. Too many of his passes had too much air under them, and like the Ryan Pulley interception play, too much air. And then on the other side of the ball, they just didn't – I don't think they tried to do anything too extravagant. They leaned on Rakeem Boyd and some of the passes down the middle to Cheyenne O'Grady helped move the chains for them. And they just kind of kept it pretty simple for Connor Nolan. And as he said, he didn't try to do too much, but he also didn't try to do too little. The same kind of effort I don't think is going to win the game against Vanderbilt next week, but it was good enough to suffice for a win on Saturday.
Chad Morris meets with the media in about 5 hours or so, a little over 4 hours today for his regular Monday visit. What do you think he says about Ty's story today and who will start at quarterback this Saturday?
Well, his final words on Ty on Saturday were he expected him to get right back in things Sunday night, and be our starter on Saturday is what he said. And as soon as he comes back from the concussion, he should be ready to go. I mean, he was advancing at a nice clip. He was finding a rhythm with the guys. And as I was asking both Chad Morris and Joe Craddock about last week, the final piece to what this team can do to maximize itself is to get more proficient throwing the ball down the field. I'm not sure if we saw the proper angle on C.J. O'Grady's catch in the end zone, but I did not see that ball out. So I still haven't seen it very well.
The TV angles weren't good at all. You couldn't see the ball at all on the replay angles that were shown on TV, and the side judge was really probably the only one that had a look at the ball.
Exactly. And so what we were saying in the box, whatever they say on the field is what is going to stand on this because of the angles. But that was a Cole Kelly throw. And but I just think that when they get a little bit deeper passing game to complement what else they're doing, they will have maximized what this team is capable of.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now in the Morning Rush. Tom, going into Vanderbilt, to me it's almost as simple as giving Arkansas some extra confidence to win the game against Vanderbilt is getting Ty Story healthy. Do you feel like that's the only real difference that needs to be made for this team to be able to get a victory against Vanderbilt? Or what are some other things that you need to see them work on this week if they want to get that W?
Well, Vanderbilt, I mean, I watched a lot of their game Saturday against Kentucky, and they play very salty defense. So, they're going to have to operate very efficiently on offense. They can't. I mean, there's going to be some negative yardage plays, and even Tulsa got several tackles in the backfield. Rakeem Boyd was not holding up on his feet very well in that game. He stumbled a few times, and I don't know if the 22 carries got him a little fatigued or what, but I'd like to see him come back a little fresher this coming week and hold on to the ball. I mean, that's the first fumbling problem they've had with him so far. And then defensively, I think they have to slow the Vandy running game. I mean, Shermer is a much better passer, so they're going to have to play better coverage. And I guess just, the kicking game was okay. It was one of their best games, and Limpert was getting it done. And they're just going to have to play a cleaner game all around, I think, to have a chance to beat Vanderbilt.
Give us your evaluation of the wide receivers as a group and what's going on there. Again, we see a game where it's a running back or a tight end or a couple of those guys at the top of the receiving numbers. What's going on in your estimate with the wide receivers this year?
Well, I just think it's the complete operation of the offense. Can you protect long enough to get open downfield? Are your guys fast enough to defeat the coverage they're up against? Against North Texas, they couldn't do that. They couldn't mesh protecting Cole Kelly long enough, getting open deep, and connecting on those throws. I'm sure they've gotten better over time. They just haven't shown a lot of it. It's been, the touchdown pass to Petway, the safety stayed too far in the middle of the field, couldn't get over in time. Beautiful throw. They tried to get the ball to Jordan Jones on a couple of things, and it worked last week, but not a whole lot of that. The slant to Jared Cornelius, well, the safety, basically, he knew there was a blitz. The linebacker got through a hole without being blocked and got on Connor Nolan almost immediately. And Nolan threw it in a place where it could be contested, and McKinley just beat Jared Cornelius for the throw. So it's a combination to me of a lot of things, but I think as this offense just gets more and more in tune with the receivers they have and they continue to add speed, that I think it'll be an element that will pick up. But obviously, in year one, they haven't hit the receivers near as much as they probably felt they could.
Tom, one of the other big stories going on in this game was something that wasn't happening on the field. Of course, Kelly Bryant taking his visit. He was featured a lot on the television broadcast, I know. We've heard some things. What have you heard about his visit, how well it went, just his overall appearance there?
Just that he really enjoyed it. I mean, you could tell. But he was having a good time, had the cap at a side angle, and just seemed to be enjoying himself, calling the Hogs. Looked like he needed some practice with that a little bit. But the recruiting guys who cover this for us seem to think that Arkansas is a favorite. I mean, like better than a 50-50 shot. I was reading some of the things that he talked about after the visit, and basically it looks like to me he's trying to mentally figure out a way to make it happen here. Now, things could change. He says he's going to slow play the process. I guess we still have close to 2 months. right under 2 months before he did something, unless he committed early. But at this point, it looks to me like he sees Arkansas as being his leader.
Yeah, I think he's, headed to Missouri for his next visit and then a couple more after that. So you hope you're not so far back from his most recent visits, the ones he ends his recruiting process with, that the effects of this weekend wear off.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a hope. But you've got to think that even a non-capacity crowd here was loud, and you could kind of see the spirit they have for the team, even though the team was 1-6 going into the game, that would supersede what was going on at North Carolina. And I'm not sure who Missouri is playing this weekend. I think it's
Kentucky.
A division game. But I think the opportunity, he sees the opportunity here that he could come in and get playing time next year, which is all he's looking for.
Yeah, that's going to be the most important thing. I know Razorback fans are excited about it. I wanted to also ask you about the defense a little bit, Tom, too, because they were able to shut out Tulsa. And Tulsa's not a great offensive team by any stretch, but it was nice to see them bounce back after having two straight games of giving up over 600 yards to Alabama and Ole Miss. What is the real defense that we're looking at here? Is it the defense that played against Alabama and Ole Miss and Auburn that gave up a lot of yardage and points, or is it more of the defense that we saw against teams like Texas A&M or teams like Tulsa or something like that? Because I just can't figure out what this defense is and just truly how good they are.
Well, there's a certain team, certain styles that did not suit them to defend. And, you know, Alabama's speed on the edges and Tua's pinpoint throwing was tough on them. And then the week after that, Jordan Ta'amu, the same thing. I mean, a good quarterback with receivers that he's on the same page with, and a pretty solid running game. So I thought the quick change at the start of the game, it felt just like the Auburn game. There was two or three games where the defense, the Colorado State game, that the opponent got a turnover in their territory for their first possession. They gave up one first down and then held them to a field goal try. And unfortunately for Tulsa, their kicker wasn't on his game and he missed a 28-yarder. And then he later missed a 42-yarder. So that helped on the shutout front. But I felt like they won in the trenches in this game, and they bottled up the running game eventually, and they made Tulsa have to throw it. And Seth Boomer and that group of receivers just were not good enough and could not operate cleanly enough to get over on them. And they got that long pass late in the game, and they still stood up because Agim, he rushed from the nose position on that last play, got the sack. And, for what they've been through this season, you're happy that something good happened for that unit. And I expect them to be able to hold Vanderbilt down pretty well. I mean, I just don't think Vanderbilt's super explosive. They're going to have to do like Arkansas does, which is move the chains with the run game and be very effective getting down the field. And I don't see this game going high into the 20s next week.
Yeah, I don't either, Tom. It's going to be a fascinating game for a lot of different reasons, and we'll preview that more with you on Thursday. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate you joining us, Tom. Great stuff, man. Looking forward to catching up with you on Thursday.
Outstanding. Talk to you then.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Going around the SEC, as well as around college football, some interesting games that were going on over the week. And, of course, starting with Alabama, the number one team in the nation. They were going to be close against Tennessee. Actually, no, it wasn't at all. So get this. Alabama didn't score a single point in the fourth quarter, and they won 58-21. Didn't score a single point in the fourth quarter and won 58-21. Well, they scored 28 in the first quarter.
I'll say, I knew it was 28 in the first quarter. Was it 42 at the half, if I remember right?
That's right, 42-14 at halftime.
Kind of, at some point you just quit watching that game. But, yeah. That's one of the reasons, I'm telling you, CBS and ESPN, we wonder why Alabama hurts themselves from a TV standpoint. Now, I know the LSU game, that they're both off, LSU and Bama, have the week off this week to get ready for that huge game. That's going to be the biggest game of the college football season.
Has to be.
It's going to be one versus probably three now that Ohio State's been beat, because Clemson has to move up to two. I'm guessing, I don't know what.
Maybe Notre Dame's at three. I don't know.
Maybe
yeah.
It's going to be two top five teams, one versus three or four.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, should be, the college football game of the year, at least to this point. I don't know what game would be bigger other than maybe once you get to the conference championship games.
The only one that I could think of maybe being bigger would be if Ohio State and Michigan both only have one loss going into the final week of the season, and people will make that into a bigger game because it's Ohio State and Michigan State, or Ohio State and Michigan. So I think that would be the only one that could, and also because that may mean that, whoever wins that game essentially gets into the college football playoff. So, but
they both have one loss right now.
That's right.
Right.
Oh, and Michigan lost to Notre Dame.
Right.
Which is a little better than Ohio State getting smoked by Purdue.
I
want to bring that up here in a second. Yeah. But just to give you a ridiculous Tua update on his stats, he has over 2,000 yards now passing, 70% of his passes completed, 25 touchdowns, zero interceptions, and still yet to throw a fourth quarter pass. So there's your ridiculous.
And people want to question the Alabama secondary. There's why the secondary may not be up to their normal standard, the Saban standard. It don't have to be when you got a guy
throwing those,
dominating offensively.
Yep.
They still determine the winner with points.
That's right.
And when your offense is scoring 58, 50 plus.
And most of the time it's in the first three quarters.
And once again, Tennessee fails to score more than 31 points. They get 21. So, still as of today, Arkansas has the most points scored on Alabama's defense.
Holding on to that rope. Holding on to that victory. As long as possible.
Print the shirts.
That's right. Print the shirts. Put it on a t-shirt. Get it going there. So they have. And also the other game that was going on, LSU and Mississippi State. This is the other top 25 matchup. LSU does get the victory 19-3. Over Mississippi State. I know that LSU is a really good team and they have a really good defense and whatnot, but man, Mississippi State's offense has just not been good this year, where they had Nick Fitzgerald coming back, a lot of the key pieces coming back. Joe Moorhead's supposed to be an offensive-minded guy who was under James Franklin at Penn State. You thought that the offense would be able to perform a lot better than what they have been, but that's really been the problem with Mississippi State this season, is that they just haven't been able to score enough points.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of surprising for them. And that's a team that Arkansas playing here in the near future that may be helpful to them.
And Mississippi State, picked by many to finish, you know, third, maybe even second in the division, was a clear consensus top 20 team heading into the year. And Nick Fitzgerald is not the problem there.
No. No. In fact, they're 1-3 in the SEC. Their lone victory coming against the Auburn Tigers, who actually played Ole Miss on Saturday, too. And I kept feeling like this was a make-or-break game for Gus Malzahn. That was going to be huge. They ended up getting the victory in kind of lame fashion. It looked like it was up in the air at halftime. It was 10-6. Auburn was ahead, but they scored 21 points in the third quarter. They win 31-16 in that game. Auburn's next three SEC opponents, however, though, is Texas A&M, Georgia, and Alabama.
So had to win this one.
Had to win this one. Because you're looking at it, because they're 5-3 right now. They have, of course, their throwaway game that they always get right before they play Alabama, just like Alabama gets. They end up playing the Liberty, real barn burner. But if Auburn loses the three SEC games there, they go 6-6. Not exactly ideal for Gus Malzahn and what they expected out of him this season.
They're still not going to buy him out. I don't care what anyone says. They're not going to give him $30 million it is in reality.
Well, if they did, I agree with you, but if they did, if I'm Malzahn, I don't coach, or at least don't become a head coach for a while. Kind of go the other route. Maybe he goes and works for Saban. That seems to be what SEC fired SEC coaches end up doing.
I don't think he'll do that.
End up going working for Saban. But either way, that was the one. But the game, of course, I wanted to bring up too was Ohio State and Purdue. Is there anything that unites the nation more than when Ohio State is getting housed by a very average team in the Big Ten? Because it seems like it happens fairly often. Last year is against Iowa. This year is against Purdue. 49-20 over Ohio State. And what was crazy is at the end of three quarters, it was 21-6. Purdue was up. At the end of three quarters. But 28 points in the fourth quarter by Purdue sets it away. They rush the field. It was a great moment. It was a great defensive performance by Purdue. And, again, there's just, to me, nothing more satisfying to see Ohio State and Urban Meyer lose a football game to a team they shouldn't.
Watching that game, Purdue had the lead at the half, and then Ohio State got the ball first to start the third quarter, and you thought, Well, this will be an interesting series. This series right here is going to tell you a lot. Ohio State in about five or six plays, march right down the field. Boom, 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 boom. Get down to about the 10-yard line and get stalled out, have to kick a field goal. And then Purdue comes right back, shoves it down their throat, puts it in the end zone. And then they do it again. And you know, they're going to win this game. They're actually going to do it. And they did.
Yep. Kept fighting. I mean, Purdue's got some playmakers on them. They started off 0-3. Now they're 3-3.
Yeah.
Or 4-3.
You speak of the playmakers, Rondale Moore, who's their stud wide receiver, he's a 4-star. He, on his recruiting day, he picked up an Ohio State hat, threw it down, and then put on the Purdue hat. Yep. So he had a little extra incentive in this game. Played outstanding.
Purdue's head coach, Jeff Brohm.
Mm-hmm.
See there next year?
Well, they're 4-3 right now. Started 0-3, so they've won four straight. If they keep this up...
He's been a hot name. In fact, his name was rumored around the Arkansas job. Now, no one ever confirmed whether or not he actually talked with the air quote search committee before Hunter Yurecek was hired, and they ended up obviously settling on Chad Morris. But his name was in the mix. I would not be surprised if at some point, if it's not this year, some year down the line, if he didn't become the next head coach at Louisville.
Might be, because he's...
Former quarterback there.
He is a Bobby Petrino disciple.
Bobby Petrino guy, and Petrino's time is not going well there. Purdue is not the end result for him. I think his coaching career probably elevates to a bigger school, bigger opportunity pretty quickly.
And you think Louisville would be the bigger opportunity?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's not a lateral move?
No.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a lateral, but I think that if another program came
then
forward...
Purdue?
Yeah, Purdue's probably one of the worst.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, no.
I'm not telling.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Purdue, but they're kind of on the level of Purdue, Indiana. I'm not saying they're Kansas bad, but they're just one of those programs that's never
It lives in the shadow of your basketball program.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that Drew Brees went there, and you have some great players that came from there, but as far as the success of the program itself, yeah, it's not going to be ever looked at. But I'm just saying, I didn't. Maybe some other program that ends up changing coaches that is a very good program, maybe a better program.
I'm just saying the parallels and the connections and the relationship. Louisville would be a place that seems like Petrino's on thin ice there.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense.
This guy's got history with the school. It makes sense. I don't know. I just don't think he's at Purdue a whole lot longer.
No, I don't think so either. So let's squeeze in a phone call. Heath is in Cabot. What's going on, Heath?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
So I'm assuming you watched the Alabama-Tennessee game, correct?
Yeah, for the most part. I fell asleep after
some of it. I mean,
you
can't watch an entire Alabama game for the most part anymore. I mean, why?
Is it just me, or was Gary Danielson just constantly talking about how Alabama is already in the SEC championship game? Let me tell you guys something. LSU is probably the most talented, physical, fast defense Alabama's going to face all year. Death Valley at night. I'm going to tell you right now, if you think or anybody thinks that LSU does not have a chance to upset Alabama in Death Valley at night, that's just idiotic.
Well, let me ask you a question. What's a bigger deal for this game? Death Valley at night in the home field edge, or Nick Saban with 2 weeks to get ready for one team?
Probably, I would say the bigger, in my opinion, Death Valley at night. I mean, you got Coach O, who's got 2 weeks to get ready for Alabama. And what is it, the last five out of seven years?
No, hang on a minute. You think that's the same thing?
Well, I think LSU has the edge. I think they got the edge. Death Valley at night, if you look at the numbers, they've only lost how many times? Maybe a handful of times.
Well, they played most of it was to Alabama.
How many times, Heath, how many times they beat Alabama since 2011?
Well, exactly, zero. But how many of those games have been decided by 7 points or less?
Did you see Devin White is out for the first half of that game? One of the best linebackers in college football?
That was a weak call, too.
That was one of the worst calls ever made. But I'm going to tell you what, listen, Coach O's going to have those boys ready to play. Devin White is going to be hungry as all get out. So when he gets in that second half, I'm just telling you right now, this game is not a lock for Alabama. And anybody who thinks, oh, yeah, well, maybe Tua hadn't played in the fourth quarter, his numbers are so good. Look, that guy has not seen a defense with a Greedy Williams.
It's going
to be a hard, hard game for Alabama, and it wouldn't surprise me if LSU pulls the upset and wins by a field goal or even 7 points. If Burrow plays like he played against Georgia, which he's very capable of doing it, I'm going to tell you right now, Arkansas put up 31 points on Alabama. Yeah, I got to believe LSU can put up 40.
Well, appreciate your phone call as always, Heath.
All right, gentlemen.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Heath. I'm not ever betting against Nick Saban with 2 weeks to prepare. No. I do agree with you, Heath. This will be the toughest game, the best competition, the best defense. Everything you said is true. Death Valley at night, all that. I just don't think all of that added up, throw it in the bucket, is enough to overcome Alabama.
Yeah, well, especially if you look at it from the perspective of just Alabama's schedule, the only team that they played is probably worth anything is A&M. But they played Louisville, who's not that good. They played Ole Miss, who's not that good. Missouri, who's not that good. Tennessee, who's not that good. I mean, they have not played really any great teams, any good teams even, besides A&M. So LSU will for sure be their biggest test, but Alabama's just too much for them. I mean, it'll be a great game, and I'm rooting for a great game, but I just don't see in any way that LSU can slow down Tua right now. Nobody can.
He's right about Death Valley. Last three games have been decided by 21 points between Alabama and LSU and Death Valley. It's going to be close, but they don't have the – and Burrow's been solid for them, but he's still completing about 52-53% of his passes. You're not going to win a game against Alabama doing that, period.
They're not going to beat Alabama.
The key for LSU, can Orgeron and this staff over the next 2 weeks – make them believe, not think they can beat Alabama, believe they're going to beat Alabama. Because if LSU doesn't believe that in their bones, they're not going to ever do it.
Yeah. And, I mean, if there's somebody that can be a believable person.
It's a mental thing.
Ed Orgeron, do it. And the way he talks would make me believe. That is for sure.
I don't know how. I can't understand
it. It's all about passion. It's not about what you say. It's about how you say it.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.